From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour as we are in the middle of our 24th year on the air, a labor of love for sure, and thanks to all of you who have helped us along the way, especially you, the listeners, and some of our great guests. Indeed, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And speaking of great guests, we are just really pleased and honored to welcome in Dr. Bob McCarty, who is coming out here to do some workshops. Bob, good to have you back on the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks very much. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I remember we talked a couple of years ago when you were coming out. You'll be doing a workshop tomorrow night in the North State, what we call the North State, Friday, March 31, 6 to 9 p.m. at St. Dominic's Parish in the great city of Orland, and then Saturday, April the 1st, no fooling, it's not April, it is April Fool's Day, but you will be there April 1, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Sacred Heart Parish in right there on Main Street in Red Bluff. Bob, tell us a little bit about yourself first.
First, I've been in professional ministry for the church for my entire career. Mm-hmm. I've worked in parishes, high schools. I worked for the Archdiocese of Baltimore for 14 years. And then most recently, I spent 19 years as the executive director for the National Federation for Catholic Youth Ministry. And in that capacity, I got to work with all the dioceses across the U.S. That was really exciting. When I left that position, Bob, I do consulting work now. I work with several national Catholic organizations who are interested in doing strategic planning or mission effectiveness assessment, mm-hmm. board restructuring. But I'm also doing this formation work because I was involved in a research project, Going, Going, Gone, The Dynamics of Disaffiliation in Young Catholics, that was sponsored by St. Mary's Press. And that research about why are young people walking away from church has really caught the attention of pastoral leaders across the U.S., that this is clearly a hot issue for people to begin to grapple with, the idea that people are walking away from our churches today.
Yeah, it's not just something we think we're observing. I mean, the data is all there, and it's hard and fast, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And Bob, here's what's interesting about all this stuff. It's even though my research was about young adults particularly, all the surrounding research says this is not a young adult issue. This is bigger than that. In fact, there's a whole body of research that's called Church Refugees, and it's about the Duns. It's about adults who were very involved in their denominations, and they are done with it. They're tired of it. They're tired of what they perceive to be the judgmentalism or the rigidity of their denominations, the emphasis on rules as opposed to people. They're done. They're done with church. They're walking away. So this is much bigger than just a youth or young adult issue. This is really a faith community challenge.
And it's primarily walking away. It's not going to another faith in most cases.
Bob, that's a really important point. Yeah, the research that we did with young adults, maybe half of them dabbled with another denomination, maybe a little less than that. But the rest really just walked away from religion completely. And the more data that comes out and the more studies that are done, it's showing that they're walking away from all forms of institutional religion. But this is the fascinating part of this. They're walking away from religion, but they're not walking away from spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such a significant point here, that the hunger for the holy is real. And it's real in our youth, in our young adults, and the adults. But they're not finding that hunger necessarily met in their current denominations.
Yeah, and I think God puts that hunger in our heart. And like you say, it may not be manifesting itself in the church for these people, but they still have that hunger.
I think that's really important for our listeners to hear, because I agree with you. I think the hunger for the holy is imprinted in our soul at birth.
Mm-hmm.
I think at birth, that hunger to be reconnected with our Creator, I think that is real. And what happens, though, with youth and young adults is that they may use a different language than church language when they talk about that hunger. But I remember one of my favorite young people in my youth ministry days who used to refer to God as her HP, not the computer, but it was her higher power.
Mm-hmm.
You hear youth and young adults using other kind of language to express that hunger for something more. There's something else. There's something bigger, whether we call it mystery, transcendence. That hunger is there, and I think they're looking for ways to they're looking for the places that respond to those hungers.
So, the people I talk to that maybe have fallen away, and we've until about a year ago when some of our teenagers had the audacity to turn 20. We were living with four teenagers, and I'll tell you, I don't think battle's the word, but it's, they're constantly keeping us on our toes, and they're constantly challenging, and these are really good kids. They're not rebellious. They're not, doing things that we wish they weren't doing. We're quite proud of who they are, but they are very challenging. And then I hear from some of their friends who have just walked away, but I never hear them, the ones who have fallen away, attack Jesus. They love Jesus. I don't even hear them attacking core beliefs of the church.
Right.
Because there's not a lot to attack there, but they do. It's almost like a rejection of institutionalism or something.
Well, you're touching on a really important point here, because there's a whole body of research that has emerged, not just about church, but about the U.S. in general, where there is a marked decrease in trust in institutions.
Mm-hmm.
That increasingly... It's all the institutions of our society. It's not hard to name things like newspapers,
right?
The media, but it now includes things like the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Since we're talking in California,
yeah,
that's
right.
Nursing home.
Good
so,
reason.
So banks, for instance, but then that it extends to things like Congress, the president.
Right.
So there's this lack of trust, and then recently. I remember well thinking that, well, the bastion, the one institution you could hold on to, the one that you could really trust, was the Supreme Court. And, mm-hmm. and now you even read about that.
Yeah. No, that's right.
People are saying. So then look what happens with church. If I don't trust institutions, I don't know what it's like in California, but here in Maryland, the lack of trust in schools. And so we've seen a marked increase in homeschooling.
Right.
So if people are distrustful of the societal institutions, church becomes part of that. So now I don't trust the church. I don't trust the church institution, and I don't trust the church leadership. And it's got nothing to do with the teachings. Your point earlier was important. It's about the institution itself is not trustworthy. And then in the U.S. circles, and I'm sure the listeners have experienced this in their own way. I take all this right back to the late 1990s, early 2000s, when the clergy abuse crisis really hit on the scene in the Catholic world.
Sure.
And people reacted to what they saw as the lack of transparency and the out-and-out cover-up of what was going on around that issue of clergy abuse. And so all of a sudden it's like, I can't trust you, and I don't trust you in this. I don't trust you in anything. And so it really has come home, I think, to the Catholic world.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the truth. And it was in some areas, handled really, really, really badly. And just the fact that it happened, the abuse happened, is indefensible. And especially for church. I know some people will say, well, you know, it doesn't happen anymore here than it does in society in general and stuff. And we're better than that. You know, and then in some areas the cover up and the moving around of priests and all that was just again double indefensible. And
well, you know, Bob, one of my friends in my parish, we sit in the same pew every Sunday. Mm-hmm. My wife and I, and Tom and his wife. I mean, really, it's just funny how it happens. But when the report came out. Excuse me, when the report came out of Pennsylvania, to our Archbishop's credit, Archbishop Lurie of Baltimore, to his credit, he had every parish had a preach on that at the following Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did that in my parish. But after Mass, Tom, who's been in the business world for his entire life, Tom said to me, he said, "That's it." He said, "I'm done." He says, "I get that people are sinful, and I can forgive that. But this is a failure of leadership, is how he described it. This lack of transparency, the lack of clear communication with the people, moving people. He said, that's a lack of leadership. He says, I can't condone that. And he used the words, I'm done. Hmm. Now, Tom is not done because his wife, Rosemary, said he's not done. So there's that. But I thought he captured people's mood really sincerely and really accurately about what was happening. So you can see how that ties into that whole lack of trust issue.
Yeah, indeed. And we've been, we've had certainly our cases here in the Diocese of Sacramento, as they've had everywhere else. We've been very, very fortunate that Bishop Wiegand, when it all hit, and Bishop Soto, who succeeded Bishop Wiegand here, have been very, very, very strong with, you know, absolutely no tolerance, zero tolerance, and immediately removing people credibly abused, no moving around, none of that at all, and immediately contacting law enforcement, you know, if we are the first to learn, and doing whatever the church can to reach out to the victims. Obviously, in this day and age, that's very hard to do because people have a lawyer, and I'm not disputing that. I mean, that's just the way we do things. And the lawyers say, well, don't deal with the church, deal with me, you know. So it's really hard for the church to reach out in a meaningful way to a victim who is basically saying, well, I don't want anything to do with you. I'm not, thanks for your outreach, but thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah, boy, you can just see how people are going to struggle with that, because for so many people, obviously, the church was like one of the cornerstones of our life.
Right.
And so when all of a sudden you don't trust that cornerstone, I just think that sets people adrift. It's like, where's my anchor in all this? I mean, that was the one place I really thought I could let down my guard. I could be trusting. Right. And now all of a sudden I feel like I've been let down by that very institution that I've been relying on for my entire life. So I think we're still seeing the fallout from that. And I think it's been enhanced. Because I do agree with you, and I've been in the church work for so long. I know that the church has taken great strides to address that issue. And we probably address it as well or better than any of the other institutions with which I'm familiar.
Yeah, I think we've become almost a model with the yearly audits and the safe environment programs. I think we've become a model for public schools. We've become a model for the Boy Scouts. We've become a model for everybody else who's had trouble.
Yeah, I think we have. I think that it'll take time because people have long memories. And so it's like, okay, I'm watching this, but then every once in a while, and it just, every once in a while, then what happens is a new report comes out, and you go, I thought we were over this. But even that, sometimes the reports are from decades ago, but it still just says, I just can't keep doing this. Mm-hmm. So I think the church is going to have to grapple with that issue, because I think that's one of the contributing factors to why people of all ages are walking away. I don't think it's the only reason, but I do think it's a contributing factor, and I think other factors now have come into play with that. That I think are challenges for us as a church.
Yeah, I think it's less a factor, believe it or not, with the youth. I think you've hit the distrust institutions much more with the teenagers, young adults, than the abuse crisis.
Bob, it's interesting. One of the things that I've been reading about, and I don't have stats on all this, but I know there's a whole research project around the perception that young people have that the issues that they are most concerned about are not the issues that the church is concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
And so think that through. If you're a high school young person or you're a college young adult, and you're concerned about things like across the country, racism, school
right.
shootings, gun violence, climate change, the immigrants on the border. You go down that list of issues, and if they don't, and when I say the church, for young people, all religion is local. And so even though I think it's a national level, I think the church has spoken out about all those issues. But if it hasn't filtered down to the parish, if young people don't hear this in their parish, I suspect maybe our Catholic schools are in a better position to address some of those issues with their young people because of their curriculum. But the vast majority of Catholic young people don't go to Catholic schools. And so if they're not hearing about that in their youth ministry or religious ed, if they're not hearing about it on Sunday, it means that the issues important to me are not important to the church. And so that's a contributing factor, too. They're just not hearing their concerns addressed by the institution.
Yeah, I remember it telling my own kids about Laudato Si, and they're saying, that was a pope? You know, like really?
Yeah.
You know, it was, you know, so.
That was our team. Our team did that?
Yeah, yeah, you know, and the same thing with the. You know, welcome the stranger among us. If there's anybody that's concerned about what's going on the border, about the human crisis there, not about, you know, we have a right to keep people out and all these political arguments, but just the care about the human beings on the border who are suffering so much, it's the Catholic Church.
Yeah, it's exactly right. So how is it? So I've thought for a while here that the church has we have a PR problem. You know, we have a marketing problem. People can easily identify what the church is against. I don't know if they can identify what the church is for.
Boy, that's well said.
So,
yep.
And so what strikes me is it's like, okay, so for pastoral leadership today, how are we communicating who we are as Catholics, and where do we stand on the hot issues, and especially, because of my work, the issues that affect youth and young adults? And you know this from your own kids. Our kids today are like global citizens.
Mm-hmm.
They are immersed in the global issues because it bombards them all the time because of social media. So they're aware of all these issues, and if it's never talked about, especially through a Catholic lens, they think that this is not what the church is about. The church is all about who gets to go to communion and who doesn't.
Yep.
And young people are going, what, are you kidding me? You think that's the issue? Have you paid attention to school shootings? I mean, so you can start to see what's going on in their head, you know, how they perceive all this. So, yeah, so I think it's a function of leader. I think leadership has to step back and say, all right, if these are the factors that contribute to people walking away at all ages, how are we going to address that? Because people keep doubling down, and they keep using language like, and this drives me crazy, they talk about the emphasis on evangelization, and that happens at every level of church. We we are all about evangelization. But people interpret that as recruitment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay,
mm-hmm.
we're going to evangelize, and that means we're going to go out and recruit people and bring them back to church. And I'm going to say to them, especially in the post-COVID era, you wonder why they're not coming back? What are they coming back to? If it's the very thing they walked away from, they're not coming back.
You're right. Evangelization and conversion have almost become a dirty word. Wait a minute. You're trying to convert somebody who believes something else. You're saying there's something wrong with them, you know?
Yeah.
And that's not okay to say there's something wrong with a belief, because we're multicultural, we're multi-everything. With my own kids, what I say, well, hey, the other day you just came home and told me about a great new restaurant that I've never been to. You're recruiting me. You're evangelizing this restaurant. You know, you're trying to share the good news about a movie, a school play, a restaurant, a national park that you visited that I know nothing about, and you're trying to convince me that maybe I'd like to do this. Well, it's the same thing with our faith. We've found the truth. Don't I want to share that?
Yeah, it's really, it's really interesting. My doctoral work was all around the issue of evangelization of young people.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought that the real challenge is, can I take all this, the church documents and all this that focuses on evangelization, can I narrow that down? And in fact, we'll get a chance to talk about this in the workshops when I'm with all your folks. But I think specifically it comes down to, can we tell the good news of Jesus? Can we be the good news of Jesus? I mean, at the heart of evangelization, it's telling the story and it's being the story. And so, I want to tell you the story of a great new restaurant that I've been to. And in fact, I want to go with you. I'll go with you to that restaurant.
Right.
You know, and I'm not slamming the other restaurants. I'm saying that this is a restaurant that you might really enjoy this. And it's up to you. I'm not forcing you into it. It's like, let's go to dinner. So that whole idea of what it means to be church, and to go back to one of those earlier points, and if the only thing we know what to say is about what we're against, well, that just doesn't work. Until we can state clearly, here's what we are about, here's where we stand on these issues, and there's such incredible depth in the Catholic faith. I still teach confirmation, and these are high school young people. And in fact, I teach at Catholic University of America as mm-hmm. well, and so I have my college young people there. We were talking about evangelization and about the church's role in the world, and I said, you realize every day in the United States, every day, 1 million hungry people eat in Catholic institutions.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that every day in the United States, one in every six hospital beds is in a Catholic hospital?
Right.
I said, we have 225 Catholic universities and colleges. We have, I forget how many thousand Catholic elementary schools and high schools. We have 17,000 parishes right now. It's like, but you don't hear that. It's like,
no,
are so engaged in the world, and that's not what they're hearing. They're hearing who gets to go to communion and who doesn't.
Yeah,
are you kidding me?
The one I've always heard is one out of four people with AIDS in the world is cared for by the Catholic Church.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's and you know, people, you know, people, AIDS and what they associate it with and all this, you know, and the Catholic Church is caring for those people? Wow.
Wow. Yeah. But, see, that's a great insight. I wrote that down just so you know,
good.
So I can use it. So, Bob, that's the reality. The reality is, I say that the church is challenged. I call it a catechesis of current events. The church is challenged to connect life to faith, that our faith has to impact and address the real-life concerns of people today. And so And if it doesn't do that, if we are still stuck in these pious platitudes that people can't apply to their life, it's not worth the time and energy. So, and I've always believed that faith has to impact our life. And in fact, that's the joy of faith.
Yes.
That's the joy of my religion, is that it speaks to my lived reality. And so so how do we begin to do that more effectively with our youth and our young adults and even our adults who are on the edge, who are on the margin of church affiliation? So how do we connect life to the streets, or our faith to the streets, is how I would phrase it for young people today.
Dr. Bob McCarty will be at St. Dominic Parish in Orland. That's 822 A Street in Orland. If you've never been to Orland, it's a beautiful town in the North State. That's Friday the 31st, 6 to 9 p.m. And the next day, Saturday, April 1, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Sacred Heart Parish, right there on Main Street in Red Bluff. It's like a little mini cathedral. It's got the steps going right up to the church, Sacred Heart Parish, 515 Main Street in Red Bluff. Bob, we're completely out of time. I think I could talk to you all day, and we could swap stories about teenagers. But I look forward to seeing you out here, and have a safe journey, and God bless your ministry, and I hope our paths cross again soon.
Bob, thank you very much for this opportunity, and I look forward to being with the people of Sacramento Diocese. So thank you very much.
Very good. Thanks, Bob. That's Dr. Bob McCarty, and what a great man he is and what great insights he has. So we had a chance to sit down with Deacon Kevin Staskow to talk about a number of the great events coming up in the coming months, including in the fall, and we're going to bring you that interview now. So appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. Holy Week coming up. So much happening here in the Diocese of Sacramento.
Absolutely. There's a lot happening. I wanted to let people know that there's still time to sign up for the workshop with Bob McCarty in a couple days. I don't know if you've had Bob on the show.
Yes.
But he is an excellent, excellent speaker, and he's going to be in person here in Sacramento. And I wouldn't want people to miss the opportunity to hear him speak. He's going to be talking about really how to reach out to this current generation of families and youth with the faith. Passing on the faith is getting more and more difficult in our culture, and I think he'll have some good research and then also some good practical suggestions to share. So anybody who's trying to raise Catholic kids, anybody who's trying to run a program in a parish, to really reach out to the families and youth of today and not, you know, whatever, the families and youth when they were, you know, 20 years ago. I think that's the issue, is sometimes we use the same techniques and the same assumptions when we run our faith formation programs, our youth ministry programs, you know, our family programs, and anything we try to do to reach out to families and young people, we're using really old methods. So, that's on Thursday, the 30th. There's a 10 a.m. workshop here at the Pastoral Center and a 6 p.m. workshop here at the Pastoral Center.
The same workshop, but two separate ones.
Yeah, there's two workshops, the same workshop twice, one at 10, one at 6 p.m. So if you're working, you come after work. I do think it's really well worth the time. The last time he came, he was very, very well received. We did a workshop with him on disaffiliation, and it involved the principals, the DREs, and the pastors of all the parishes. They were really, they were really struck by what he had to say. And I think this is a great follow-up to that that workshop a couple of years ago.
I remember talking to Bob at that time, and also very recently about the current workshops. He is, I don't think excellent is a good enough word. He's something very special.
Yeah, no, I do think, I wouldn't say that. I'm endorsing the workshop because I do think it would be worthwhile for people to come and see that and participate in it. I do think, we've all come out of the pandemic. Some parishes are trying new things. Other parishes just went back to how things were in the past. You know, we as parents are struggling to raise our kids, and you know, I think more understanding of the research on the kids of today, I think, is really important.
Yeah, you know, and you're right when you say maybe what we did 20 years ago doesn't work as well today. You look at how much changes just in technology in the last 20 years, but just how much changes in the world and the different issues facing kids today that we didn't even dream of 20 years ago.
Yeah, you know, I recently was struggling with my two daughters. They're twins. They're 16 years old. They're taking AP World History in school, right? We got into kind of a philosophical discussion about what's the point, right? You can look up any history you want on your phone in like 5 seconds.
That's right.
So why do I need to memorize, you know, all of these trends in history? Why do I need to know this stuff when, you know, basically I've got more information than the Library of Congress at my fingertips, and I've got Bard to help me find it, or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
So it's that idea that we're in kind of a different ball game, right? Especially with a YouTube video on how to do literally anything you want to do, right? My kids don't ever try to figure it out. They just search YouTube for how do I, whatever, right? The other day I was, like 4 years ago, I remember my daughter was trying to figure out what to do for her birthday party. And she didn't, you know, when I was 12, you know, we just had to come up with our own ideas.
Yeah, yeah.
She went on Pinterest. She literally Googled fun ideas for a 12-year-old's birthday party. And like 150 ideas came up, right? I mean, she didn't have to think, right? The world did it for her, right?
Well,
that's,
you know,
a different reality, right?
You have been using a computer all the time to, you know, what's 4 times 4, and you punch it in wrong, and it says 160, and you just go with it, because you just have no sense of what 4 times 4 is.
Well, it's like nobody knows how to get anywhere anymore, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't know how to get anywhere.
Yeah,
you know, I just use Google, right? If you ask me, how do I get from the Pastoral Center to the Cathedral? I don't know. You know, I think I could probably give you that direction, but I mean, most directions I just don't know, right? Because I depend so much on my own telling me where to go. It's a lot easier. I don't have to think about that, right?
Yeah.
I don't have to think about it. It saves me time, right? I can just do it, right?
Yeah, and you know, it's
you
just,
can see why somebody taking over, a bad actor taking over Google Maps could really, you know, destroy my life, right?
Oh, I mean, man, that's perish the thought. Yeah.
Make me stop by their store, right? Get out of the car. Why am I here? Apologies. Go buy something.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, I do think it's important that we stay, some of our methods are never going to change, right? Some of the things we do in the church and the way that we spread the faith, some of that is timeless, right? But there's a lot of things that aren't. And we just need to be aware of, what's the most effective way to pass on the faith in this culture. And I think that Bob's workshop will help people, you know, and what it'll give you is not all the answers, but, you know, what to think about, right, and how to try to adapt what we're doing to be more effective.
Yeah, and you know, it's Kevin, you and I have done a few presentations on this about raising kids, and it really does. It's you talk about world history. You know, I remember the Encyclopedia Britannica when our family, you know, as a traveling salesman, knock on your door and they'd sell you this 24 volume. And when you're in high school, you would just go to volume B if you were trying to learn about Boston, you know, and you'd look it up and you'd look up in the index. And now, like you say, everything is at your fingertips. And you know, we don't ever want to put our religion into that box. And yet, one of my daughters, who has some learning disabilities, she wanted to know how to pray the rosary. She was in a group, and she just couldn't remember, you know, all the prayers and all the order. I mean, it was that difficult for her. And we went online, you know, and it was so much easier for her to follow the beads than me telling her this is how you do it, like I would have done 20, 30 years ago. So, I mean, there's the good and the bad. It's like you're in a strange town, and what time's Mass on Sunday? And you can find, and Google will get you there, too. So.
No, I just think it, you know, it's important that we, you know, update our learning and our techniques, and I think, you know, I think that workshop might help with that. I really do. You know, we in the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry and the Office of Family and Faith Formation, we're getting kind of geared up for summer activities as well. You know, of course, we have Camp Pendola, right. Which is still around. And we're trying to spread the word about the camp. We also have some leadership programs. We have a training program called Youth on a Mission, which is going to be at Camp Pendola this summer.
Mm-hmm.
That's for teens who are interested in leadership in parishes. So it could be somebody who's interested in helping out with youth ministry, but it could also be people who are involved in other ministries in your parish that are interested in leadership. It's a general like Christian leadership program called Youth on a Mission.
Yeah, and that's you sort of move that around from summer to summer, and I think it's great to have it up in the hills this year at Camp Pendola.
Yeah, no, I think it'll be a good opportunity, and then it's an opportunity also that they can participate in all the Camp Pendola activities. You know, mm-hmm. archery and hiking and
right.
be out in the woods, and so it's kind of a different environment. We've had that at the at the Cal Maritime facility in Vallejo before. We've had that at Trinity Pines. We've had that at different places, but it's at Camp Pendola this summer, so we're excited about that. And of course, we're actually trying to get all the speakers and everything together for Ministry Days that's coming up in September, and we'll be doing On Fire again at Six Flags. So. A lot of those things, we're doing pre-planning for a lot of those things right now. And, coming out of Lent and into the Easter season, the parishes are really busy during April, so it's not a super busy time for us, right? Because most of the sacraments are happening. So they're doing first communions and confirmations and then everything. So we don't do as many workshops, et cetera, in the April, May time period. We're kind of getting ready for the summer.
Now, I know that Ministry Days is always the last Friday and Saturday in September. On Fire is slightly two before. Do you have an actual date on that?
Yeah, so On Fire is the 16th.
The 16th, okay.
The 16th. And then Ministry Days is actually the 23rd and 24th, so the weekend right after that, the Friday and Saturday, 22nd right. and 23rd of September.
The last full weekend of September.
Yeah, and so the 23rd is the day. The 22nd is going to be two activities happening on the 22nd. That's for all of the school, the Catholic school faculty and staff will be there for a special day of formation. Also on the 22nd, we're doing a retreat day for parish staffs. So it's an opportunity for parish staff and ministry leaders to come together if they're available on the Friday. So I imagine it would mostly be the paid staff to come together on Friday to have a retreat day together. And the day will challenge, you know, we'll talk about how we find our support as ministers and how can we be a support as a parish staff to each other. It'll talk about challenge people to like try new and innovative things mm-hmm. in the parish, and we'll also be talking about how we can be more hospitable. You know, we talk about the Eucharist, inviting the Eucharistic revival. A core of that is welcoming people back to the Eucharist, welcoming people in our parish, and part of that to get people to come back to Mass and engage in the sacrament of the Eucharist is to really be a welcoming presence of Christ to others. So. The retreat will focus on those three main themes for parish staffs. We've got some great speakers coming in for Ministry Days this year. So that'll be on Friday. And then Saturday is our general day where anybody who's involved in any parish ministry at all in any fashion is welcome to come. We have workshops in all the different ministry areas, Respect Life, youth ministry, faith formation, marriage preparation, preparation for the other sacraments. We'll have some workshops on from the Black Catholic Ministry, from Deaf Ministry, and from the Ministry for Catholics with Disabilities. We have all kinds of different ministry workshops and Mass with the Bishop and an excellent keynote address. It should be a really good day.
Yeah, it'll be at St. Francis. Have you filled up all of the workshops, or are you still looking for people that maybe would like to present something?
No, we're pretty much done looking for workshops because what we're doing is we're trying to get the booklet out this year early.
Good.
Before the parish faith formation youth ministry programs kind of shut down or go on hiatus for the summer. So we're trying to get that booklet out in May. So we pretty much got the speakers
very
lined
good.
Up, and we'll be starting to announce those in the next few weeks. Looking forward to that. And the On Fire event at Six Flags is also going to happen, and we'll be making some major announcements about that in the next few weeks.
Kevin, if you would, explain. I know I run into people all the time that say, our kids didn't make it to Six Flags yet, but it sure sounds like a good event. Maybe they heard about it on the radio, or they heard about it in their parish. Maybe explain just for a thumbnail of what's involved at Six Flags. I know it you change it up every year, but what's involved at Six Flags?
Yeah, so Six Flags is an event that we co-sponsor with nine dioceses, the Diocese of Reno, and then eight other dioceses in the state of California. So, the Diocese of Santa Rosa, Sacramento, of course, Stockton, San Jose, Monterey, Fresno, San Francisco, and Oakland.
So everything north of the Tehachapi.
Yeah, so Fresno, Fresno North.
Yeah.
Right? So
yep.
Fresno is pretty far away.
So actually Bakersfield, which is in the Diocese of Fresno.
Yeah, so part of Fresno is fairly close to us, but Fresno's a pretty large diocese. So half of it is closer to Southern California and half of it would be probably Northern California. But anyway, so we partner with all those dioceses, and we do an event at Six Flags here in Vallejo. Vallejo is part of the Sacramento Diocese, of course. So all those dioceses send youth to that event. And so it's a Mass in the morning with the bishops. It's a full day in the park just going to Six Flags, having a fun day at Six Flags. There's an all-you-can-eat lunch, and then there's also an evening program with Adoration of the Blessed Sacrament and a speaker. We also have, after that evening program, the park closes, but it stays open for two extra hours for just the people from our On Fire event. So we get to go on all the rides, don't have to wait, the lines aren't as long because it's just our group that's there. Last year we had about 2,000, and we've had as many as 3,700. That was the biggest event. I think it was 2011 or 2012 that was 3,700. But we had 2,000 last year coming out of the pandemic, so we were excited about that. We only, one year we had to do it virtually, but this is the, so we did a virtual one of the years. We did a series of virtual events instead of the live event because we were right in the middle of the pandemic.
Right.
But we have done, this is the 14th year of On Fire. So.
Wow.
Exciting. It's been 14 years already. It's amazing.
So explain, you're the point guy. You're the guy that came up with this idea. How did Six Flags respond when did they come to you? Did you go to them? How did that start?
I think there'd been a conversation between a previous youth and young adult ministry director for the Diocese of Sacramento, Victor.
Uh-huh.
His name is Victor. He had actually talked to them about possibly having some kind of youth day, right? And Life Team does a similar event at Six Flags in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
Since I had started in youth ministry in 1994, I was part-time in youth ministry from 91 to 93. And then in 1994, I started full-time in youth ministry. I was at a parish in the Diocese of Oakland. And at that time, I was shocked that there was no large event, right? All the large events happened in the Midwest or happened in Southern California. We didn't have any large youth events in Northern California. And so the entire time I was in youth ministry, there had been this conversation kind of in the back, especially like after World Youth Day happened in Denver in 1994, and then these large events, Steubenville started doing its conferences. There was all these things happening, but there was nothing in Northern California. And so when I became a diocesan director, that was in the back of my mind, like, hey, we should have this. There's no reason why we can't have something in Northern California. So I approached the directors. I approached the bishop first and said, I'd like to do this big event at Six Flags. And when I contacted Six Flags, they said, oh, you know, we had talked to Victor previously. We'd love to have you do an event here. That would be great. You know, let's talk about it. So when I talked to the bishop, he gave me two things. He said, one, let's try to make this more of a regional event and not just our diocese, because we have to attract a lot of kids and to make it worthwhile. So this would be a good idea. And the second thing is he said, I'd really like this event to be used to promote vocation. So those were the two main things that he said. So I just called all, you know, I was new. I just called all the diocesan directors from all those different dioceses. And it turned out at that time, there were several of us, probably five of the diocesan directors were brand new in our first year. It just happened to be that the case, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they all were excited about, oh, well, we could do this, you know, this will be a great thing to work on because we can kind of do it together. And so I got all nine dioceses to sign on to the event that first year. And I lucked out. I got Matt Maher had just, you know, was just breaking into the,
yeah.
Matt Maher was just, he had just come out with a single that was a crossover single to like, you know, it was really popular on Christian radio, and it actually became, you know, was a mainstream Christian hit. And so that song kind of came out right after I had asked them if they'd be willing to come to the event. And they were touring with 10th Avenue North, who was really popular. So I got the tour. I got 10th Avenue North, Addison Road, and Matt Maher
mm-hmm.
the first year.
So
it was a combination of kind of built up demand for an event like this for many years. All nine dioceses co-sponsoring it, and the fact that we were able to get this tour to come through.
Boy.
And add a date, at an event that had never happened before. So it was really the Holy Spirit that made all those things come together
yep.
the same year. And we were worried about selling 1,000 tickets, and we sold out. The week before, you know, like we were by the time of the day of the event, we were oversold. We were completely sold out and just amazed, right?
What's a sellout? 2,500, something like that?
Well, is that they told me that that the stadium held 3,000, mm-hmm. and later they readjusted that to 3,200 because we sold over 3,000 tickets our first year, and
wow.
so. That was the exciting thing about it is to kind of sell it out and then whatever. And then also, since we were able to pull that many people the first year, Six Flags, you know, we had a good position to be able to negotiate a good deal, you know, and so then, you know, because the cost of bringing in, artists, musicians and speakers and things like that have gone up a lot
sure.
since we started. So it's allowed us to keep the event going. So like I said, we've been going for 14 years. We're super excited about, you know, building back up to that. You know, I'd like to build it up back up to 3,000. But the event was amazing with 2,000 last year. I think nobody could believe it. For context, I think we had almost as many people at our conference as they had at the National Catholic Youth Conference in Southern California this year, right? So... we were excited about our numbers, and it went very well.
So First off, Six Flags was the logical choice of places within this nine diocese area.
Well, you know, it was going to be our, you know, we started the event, so obviously
right.
I wanted, you know, primarily our parishes to be able to go, and so I want, you know, it was in our diocese, the only amusement park in our diocese.
Yeah.
The only other option would be Great America.
Great America, right? Yeah.
But Great America is, like, farther away. I mean, Vallejo is pretty centrally located for, you know, Oakland, San Francisco, Santa Rosa, Stockton, Sacramento, and San Jose, right? Pretty centrally located for all of those dioceses, right? Reno, it's a lot closer. It's closer for Reno by about an hour.
Right.
So that's good too. You know, Fresno and Monterey, I mean, they're pretty far away. So
right.
No matter where we had it, that would have been. I mean, for Monterey and San Jose, I guess the other option, the Great America option, would have been better. But you know, we wanted to get as, you know, many people as we could from our diocese. That first year we had, I think it was 1,200 from our diocese came. I mean, it was a really good turnout. That's a larger turnout than we'd ever had for any of our youth conventions in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You know, youth convention would draw between 600 and 900 people. And this was 1,200 that came to Six Flags for that first event.
So Fresno and Monterey, are they able to send a fair number of people?
They only send a few. I mean, there's not a lot that come from there. It's mostly the dioceses that are closer by. Reno actually sends a lot. They send between 200 and 300 every year. They bus the kids in, mm-hmm. and they'll have 3, 4, maybe 5 buses sometimes come from Reno.
And that's the only diocese that buses?
Some of the larger parishes bus, but the
diocese. They have their own bus, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We sponsor a bus from the North State, one or two buses from, usually leaves from Red Bluff.
Right.
So that the northern parishes can come to Red Bluff, and then they can get a ride.
Mm-hmm.
The bus that starts in Redding and then picks up in Red Bluff. Red Bluff is kind of where, you know, people can come across from Chico or come across
sure.
from the Ridge Deanery, come across that way, and you hit 5 there. So that's kind of where we pick up. But we always sponsor at least one. I think one year we had 3 buses, but it's not a huge number, but we do try to sponsor buses to try to get people.
Oh, that's good. That makes it a lot easier for people, you know, in Anderson and Redding and Chico and everywhere else. Yeah. Yeah. Well, so World Youth Day coming up this summer, and haven't we usually had a virtual World Youth Day as well?
Yeah, we do. We have a virtual World Youth Day event. We haven't announced the details of that, but our hope is to have a virtual World Youth Day at Trinity Pines the same weekend mm-hmm. that the Mass happens. Bishop Soto will be in World Youth Day,
right?
And so the idea is to do a live stream of him to be there for the participants here at the they call it Stateside World Youth Day, right? We do a local event that coincides with the international event.
Yeah, Bishop Soto is very good about being on the radio as well, and sending communiques that are on the website, but also have participating in the World Youth Day live, the virtual Youth Day is really great stuff. And of course, this is in Lisbon in early August.
Yeah, and we're going to announce soon what the details for that World Youth Day, the local World Youth Day, is. The back and forth has been whether we do a youth event or whether we focus on a young adult event for that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still deciding which of those to do. Most likely it will be a young adult event and would be at Trinity Pines. That's the plan so far anyway.
Trinity Pines up in the Colfax area?
Yeah.
Right in Colfax almost. So.
Yeah. Yeah, in Colfax. Yeah.
What a treasure that has become in the diocese.
Yes, it's just such a beautiful location. We hope to one day renovate it. You know, it's right now just portable buildings, so they're usable, but they're old portables. They were old when they were put there. So the land, I mean, but it's just a beautiful space, right? I mean, you go there, it's just a really, and it's really close, closer to the highway and closer to hospitals, and you know, your cell phone works there.
It's real convenient to get to. Yeah,
for a modern, for a retreat center, kind of in the modern, you know, the idea of like being able to get there quickly. So you can, you know, because people have less time, right? So the idea is it's closer to the city and stuff. So, but really, really such a beautiful area. And close to, obviously close to Rollins Lake there.
Yep.
That can also be used.
Yeah, it's just the whole area up there is just beautiful. gets a little, winter has gotten a little bit of snow too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, a little bit. Yeah,
that's amazing.
There's been a lot of snow, that's for sure.
Yeah. Anything we didn't cover, Kevin?
No, I think we're good, Bob. I'm excited to be on the show, and thank you for all the work that you do to get the word out about, you know, everything going on, and really appreciate the time.
Very good. Well, Easter blessings to you and your family and everybody you work with, and we'll look forward to our paths crossing again soon.
Thanks. Blessings to you, too.
Yeah, thanks so much. This is Deacon Kevin Stasko. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
I was sure by now, God, you would have reached down and wiped our tears away, stepped in and saved the day. But once again, I say amen, and it's still raining. But as the thunder rolls, I barely hear you whisper through the rain, I'm with you. And as your mercy falls, raise my hands and praise the God who gives and takes away. And I'll praise you in this storm, and I will lift my hands, for you are who you are, no matter where I am. And every tear I've cried, you hold in your hand. You never left my side. torn. I will praise you in the storm.